I want to thank His Holiness Srila Radhanath Swami for elaborating so eloquently on the glories of Srila Prabhupada and two topics, compassion and service to Srila Prabhupada. I will just make one small incident that occurred that showed that simply being in the physical presence of Srila Prabhupada was not only necessarily not pleasing to him, but at the same time how he indicated what it could mean. Because naturally we always wanted to be in his presence. You cannot say it wasn't special. So we had gathered at the first Kumbh Mela, and devotees came from all over India and gathered with us. But after only a couple of days, Prabhupada started telling devotees to go back wherever they came from and start and resume their preaching, and just a small crew was going to stay behind. And one devotee was specifically told to depart. So the day after, he was still there, and Prabhupada noted it. Oh, you are still here. The third day, he noted again in the audience, oh, this devotee was still there. And he looked and he said, it is just like a bug on the lap of a king. So if the bug is on the lap of the king, he's very close. So just like a bug on the lap of the king, he will simply bite. And so that evening, the devotee, he understood, and he made his departure. So the willingness to serve Srila Prabhupada doesn't require the absolute physical proximity, but the willingness to follow his instruction. And his instructions are clearly present through his teachings that are recorded profusely in books, in lecture series, in tapes, CDs, videos. We have no end to the accessibility of Srila Prabhupada.
So we left off yesterday with a letter from Srila Prabhupada, which several of us received in England, to join him, come to India and join him there. That it was time to reintroduce Krishna consciousness to his homeland. Prabhupada thought that the Indian nation had fallen, the religious life in his own country had fallen into such a state of disrepair that they were following only things that originated in the West. So that if he brought with him his Western disciples to show that these Westerners, with all of their opulence and wealth and fashion and culture, if they embraced the ancient teachings of India, then by their example, Indians would once again recognize their own culture and take it up. So this was Srila Prabhupada's plan. Very quickly, he organized, mobilized a number of devotees from all over the movement, from the west coast of America, half a dozen, east coast of America, another half a dozen. How many from London? 8 or 10?
There were 17 in all.
17 total devotees Prabhupada personally invited by letter to join him in India. He had gone on ahead of us and was in Calcutta. He told us to go to Bombay and wait for him, that he would join us in Bombay. We had been anticipating going to India for many years, of course, after meeting in Prabhupada and becoming familiar with all of his teachings and the Vedas and the costumes and the customs of that originated in India. So we were, our curiosity was at the highest level. We really felt like India was now our home in a way. And we were so thrilled to get these invitations. At last we can go to India. So practically we dropped all of our responsibilities in the West. It was rather a shock that many of the leaders in the West were suddenly being pulled away from their duties and responsibilities in the West to go to India. But Prabhupada felt it was the time. He always was anxious about time because he was an old man. He didn't know how much time he had, so he wanted to push ahead. As soon as something was running smoothly in one place, he would say, "Let's go to the next place." So everyone began to make very quick arrangements. We had no money to speak of. From our side, I remember that we were able to arrange some very cheap airfares. The flight that we took was on an airline which flew to Bombay, I believe, twice a week. There were not a lot of flights to India in those days. You know, maybe one or two a day from America, one or two a day from Europe, like that. Very small amount of global communication, transportation was going on. And they were far beyond our means in terms of money. But we found a little airline that flew from Brussels to Bombay twice a week with a small plane with two propellers. It was called Bosco Airlines. They stopped many places on the way to Bombay because they had to refuel every few hundred miles. It was such a small plane. And the devotees going to Bombay then went to Brussels, where we had to wait for the plane several days because they were doing some repairs to the plane.
Can I describe the plane?
You can describe the plane.
This was the epitome of the economy class service. As he said, it was a propeller. From the cockpit to the tail pit, there was this wire that the pilot of the plane would pull to shift the rudder to cause the plane to turn. It wasn't really a normal passenger plane in the common sense of the word. The bathroom was only one, and it was a very small plane, so there was one bathroom, and it just had a piece of burlap, not a real door. So this piece of burlap was hanging down to, you know, separate the toilet from the interior. There wasn't running water. There was more or less this big barrel that was stuck in the middle with a dipper, a ladle onto it. So, and they didn't have any airline hostesses. They weren't bringing you any meals. Not that we would have eaten them anyway. We brought our normal, you know, we probably had more prasadam than we had personal baggage with us. And when Shamsundar says we stopped every 100 miles, it was literally the truth. We'd suddenly look out the window and we'd see a desert, we'd see some palm trees, and we'd be coming down. And then I remember at one time there was this cart with a big barrel pulled by two camels, and that pulled up next to the plane, and then they started, you know, by hand pouring fuel into the plane. When this plane finally did arrive in Bombay, which it finally did, it was grounded, and actually that was the end of this particular air service.
It's the last flight.
That was the last flight it ever flew, and we were on it. You could tell about Cairo Airport.
Yeah.
We had a godbrother who arranged for those tickets, who was, Sam Rishinda remembers, he always looked like he was ready to cry, you said. I forget his name. I just want to thank you all so much for your kindness upon me. I also was pulled here from an early age for some reason not known to myself. I wanted to come here. I would read accounts. Prabhupada's causeless mercy to leave such a wonderful abode in Vrindavan. He had everything he needed. 2 rooms in Radha Damodar temple. And then to come here to give us Krishna consciousness. I don't think this glorious manifestation would happen if Krishna did not bestow and reciprocate his love to his greatest devotee. It just wouldn't happen. In Delhi, we started with a little room with weasels and monkeys in the rooms on Delhi Gate, and now there's a grand palace. I consider this country, your India, to be my mother. I sometimes live in the United States, and that's more like a father, violent. The kindness that you all show, the service attitude, keeps me going even when I maybe not sleeping. The service attitude that's part of the fabric of this country can be continued and enhanced, as Padmanath Maharaj said, to give to each other this compassion, to give. For if everybody else is happy, you will also be happy. From an early age, I don't know why, but at a birthday, they say, you have a wish with a candle. I always wished for world peace. And then when I was a little older, I realized that this was selfish, because if there was world peace, I would also be part of that. So Prabhupada, in his causeless mercy, left this place. The minute I touched the earth here, I felt at home. I felt, yes, Srila Prabhupada, you've brought me home. This is my mother. It's still my mother. It's the greatest country. And you are all the most wonderful people by your kindness and your compassion. So please, as Maharaj said, do not be artificial and want to take so much from the West. It's only temporary. Prabhupada gave the example that the people in the United States are crows eating garbage, and that the people from the East who want to eat this Western garbage have to eat twice as much to catch up. Prabhupada recognized the West because he said, we can combine the culture of the East with the dynamics of the West. Yes, we had cell phones now and so many things, computers, the dynamics, getting things done. But sometimes getting things done is penny wise, pound foolish, if you do it too fast. So here Prabhupada comes, and maybe I had so much personal association because the dog that I am, I needed it more. He had to personally feed me because I needed that personal association. So here we are. I will now start the story, continue with Malati's description of the Brother Airline Service Corporation, Bosco Airlines. Bosco in the United States is sort of a term for like a clown, a chocolate drink. So we had this arranged, 17 people from the cream of the cream. Prabhupada was waiting till we knew a little something that we could bring. That's why the timing was there. If he made another time, perhaps we wouldn't be able to enthuse anybody because we didn't know anything. Now we knew a few things. And we had some success in San Francisco and the United Kingdom and the other places that gathered together, 17 people. He put me in charge of the party. So here I am meeting in Luxembourg or Brussels all these wonderful souls that I heard about. Adinanath, who was a great Sankirtan leader. I met for the first time our Giriraj Swami. He came from the most austere temple in our budding, growing movement, the Boston Temple, where Niranjan Maharaj also came. I used to joke, because I'm just a buffoon joker, that there is Tagoshi meetings where how to split up one chana dal into three. There were only three devotees. Giriraj would have the right part of the chana, Satsvarupa would have the middle, and Jodharani would have the left. So Giriraj, wonderful, sweet soul, he was like a sergeant in the army. He wouldn't smile. He wouldn't joke. I had the good opportunity to sit next to him. What's so funny about that? Malati explained that there was some jute separating the water closet, but there is also just a piece of jute separating the pilot. The cockpit, there was no door. It was another piece of jute. Malati also forgot to explain that some people were bringing goats and chickens in the plane to wherever. 100 miles, 100 miles. So Giriraj, he wasn't looking out the window. He was afraid to, he was just staring ahead. So I said, Giriraj Prabhu, why aren't you looking out the window? And he said, 'cause Maya is out the window. So I said, Maya's out the window. Do you see what's going on in this airplane? At that point, somebody regurgitated in the back seat. Maya was every place. Slowly, we began to talk, and I saw that he had a sense of humor in spite of himself. So I did a, like what they call a stand-up comedian, but I was sitting, of Prabhupada jokes, like the one about Dayananda and Nandarani saying they would adopt, but what will you do with such an old child? Prabhupada jokes. And Giriraj, before my eyes, softened and became more real and let his talents that Krishna has given him emerge. Whatever talents Krishna gives you, let it flower. That's what Prabhupada did. He saw Jamuna could write calligraphy, so she painted the sign. I could photograph, so I photographed. It was like that. Samashinda can build grandiose things, so build, carve. Maladipa could procure, get anything on the Earth planet, like a mystic city, sometimes from other planets. Anything that was needed, Malati and still can get. So he encouraged our talents. And I had requested one time to go to India, but I forgot, but Prabhupada remembered this. And so here we are on this airplane, and we arrived in Bombay, and like I say, the minute I felt this heat wave hit me when I got here, I felt embraced. I felt I am home now. And from the airport, everything was exotic. Everything was different. Some people leave immediately when they come here. It's too strange. For instance, on the way from the airport to Marine Drive, I realized in our cars, at that time there was only Ambassadors or Fiats. There's not all these cars. Ambassador, Fiat. We arrived on the day of Ram Navami. I realized that the most important thing in the car is the horn. Horn first, brakes second, engine third. And I saw people drying dal by the side of the road, and little villages and little flags coming out of temples everywhere, temples in little villages. And so then we arrived at the airport, and a man came. And he said, I am here to greet you. But he had regular clothes on. And I thought he was a police detective. I thought he was a policeman, plainclothes detective. He looked like a detective. And I said, where's your identification? And he said, he handed me a telegram from Prabhupada that said, Gurudas, American in charge. It was addressed, and Prabhupada instructed, go with this gentleman, Kailash Sakshiriya, and I will join you soon. And so we rode to the house on Marine Drive, and he welcomed us, 17 people, and I shall tell you more about that later, but I would like to hear the impressions of my Prabhus about their arrival in India.
Yeah, the heat was definitely noticeable when we arrived. The airport at that point in time was just like a little cement bungalow with, you know, paint peeling off the wall, dingy green. And we knew Prabhupada was somewhere in Calcutta. We knew we were landing in Bombay, and very few of us had any connection of the distance between Bombay and Calcutta. We had no phone numbers of anyone when we arrived. So I remember when we got off the plane, we got our baggage, and remember that Shamsundar, like, he brought redwood to England. He brought his power tools to India. So we had this one bag full of power tools. So we were huddled in the airport, and it actually occurred to us, well, now we're here, but we don't really know where we're supposed to go. He just said, meet him in Bombay. And we didn't have any rupees. We didn't have any phone number, even if we had rupees to make a phone call. We didn't even know that you couldn't make long distance calls in, from any phone. In those days, we had to go to the post office to make a phone call, but we didn't even know that. And we're kind of happy and relieved to be here, but then wondering what to do. And then, as Guru Das explained, this man came up, and I wasn't aware of that little exchange until later. What I remember, though, was once it was ascertained we were the group of people that he was supposed to meet, which was, of course, we were the only Western people that arrived on the plane, so that was probably a little obvious. Suddenly, people were coming up and putting garlands around our neck. And this was our first experience at wearing a garland, except for when we got married, we would get a garland and exchange it. So this was like maybe our second experience, if we were married, at getting a garland. And when we drove out of the airport, one thing hasn't changed, all the slums that are right around the airport. So we knew India was a poor country, and we'd kind of like try to, you know, remind ourselves that it was going to be a lot different over here. So when we saw those slums, I thought, it's certainly different over here. And my mind immediately started adjusting. Okay, this is how it's, you know, my daughter at this point was just around two, so okay, this is how it's going to be. And I saw little kids on the side of the street going to the bathroom, so I thought, okay, I'll have to teach my daughter how to go to the bathroom on the side of the street. And I saw people washing clothes in a gutter, and I'm thinking, I have to learn how to do this. You know, and I was trying to get my mind ready for this massive change that was going to happen. And then we end up on Marine Drive in this mansion where we didn't have to do anything because there were, you know, servants, which we weren't used to, that came and took everything away and took all your dirty clothes and returned them all nice and clean and ironed. And that we sat down and this wonderful, sumptuous prasad was served. But our main concern wasn't really all, I wasn't even concerned about those things. I was just trying to adjust that this is how you're going to be living now and trying to observe, you know, the rites and formalities so that I would be able to do it. So then when we arrived there, we were greeted. We took a bath. They told to lie down a little bit. They had mattresses all over rooms for the men and one for the women. And they told us that Prabhupada would be arriving a little later. So it was really hard to take any kind of rest when we were anticipating the arrival of Srila Prabhupada. And when he did arrive, I don't know, time-wise, we weren't in the habit of wearing watches then, so maybe a few hours. But, of course, our hearts were just jumping out of our bodies and leaping at his feet to see him. And certainly he was happy to see us, but he right away gave us an instruction. He said, go out and perform Harinam. So, you know, we were in India a few hours, and suddenly we were out in the streets of Bombay performing Harinam. And because we were Westerners, and because Westerners were still very uncommon, I mean, the only Westerners who came to India basically were very few hippies even made it over. They usually would go overland. They didn't fly. And they hung around Delhi and Nepal more than, you know, coming into the other places. So maybe a few businessmen. But to see a mass group of Westerners dressed in Indian clothing. And at that point in time, we were part of the Yellow Sampradaya. They mentioned yesterday that they put on these yellow dhotis. What had happened was Srila Prabhupada had instructed, this was back in America, so the devotees had bought a big bolt of cloth. They were trying to, you know, upgrade our image. So they wanted everybody to look the same and have the same kind of sheets on, so to speak. So they had purchased in New York a bolt of cloth, a white bolt. And Prabhupada had told Kirtanananda, you dye it saffron. So Kirtanananda, being a cook, knew that when you put the saffron in the milk, it turned yellow. So he dyed the cloth, this entire bolt of cloth, yellow. And when he brought it to Prabhupada, Prabhupada looked at it and informed him that wasn't the right color. And then they were wondering what to do. And he said, that's all right, the grihastras can wear it. So that was translated into, Prabhupada said, grihastras must wear yellow. It was actually a few years later that I found out the truth of why we must wear yellow. But anyway, the word went out, you know, fast. So everybody, including the women, would wear only yellow. So we arrived in Bombay wearing our, you know, yellow uniforms. And I remember, you know, right away the generous hearts of the our host and hostesses and their friends. They wanted to give us things, so that they would try to give us saris. And we'd say, no, we only wear yellow. You know, we were such fools. And then they were really nice. They went and they dyed. I remember they got these nylon saris. This is pre, you know, like the early nylon saris. If you put them on, it was like being in a toaster oven because no breeze could penetrate. But they went and they dyed these saris yellow. So we had all these yellow nylon saris, you know, that turned us into sweat machines. But Prabhupada, he didn't bring us to India to go sightseeing. He didn't bring us here to go on pilgrimages. He brought us here to push forward the Sankirtan movement. So the first thing we did was go out on Harinam. And it drew attention. People that literally, you know, stopped. You know, when they would maybe first hear the Kartal or the Mridanga, it didn't make, you know, they hear that. But then when they saw it was Westerners, it would just stop. You know, people would be like statues because they, you know, it was such a bizarre and unusual sight. And then people started offering us things. You know, they'd offer us drinks, these limkas. I don't know if you still have limkas, but it was like a big drink in those days. And offering us water. So half the devotees, when they would come out with water, everybody, don't drink the water, don't drink the water. And then I started thinking, well, what are we going to drink? We plan on being here a while. If we're not going to drink the water, what are we going to drink, you know? So then we started drinking the water, and of course we started reaping the results a few shortly thereafter. But it was really our mission to please Srila Prabhupada. And nobody thought at all about going anywhere else or doing anything separate from what Srila Prabhupada wanted or desired. Nobody made a plan to hop on a train and go to Vrindavan. You know, we knew Vrindavan was in India. And of course it would be wonderful to go there, but we never even thought about going there or making a plan to go to Vrindavan. We only thought about going where Srila Prabhupada was going and doing what he asked us to do.
Yes, up to this time, prior to arriving in India, Prabhupada's methodology, his plans, and his management for spreading Krishna consciousness were largely the result of our advice to him. He interacted with us. He would ask us questions about how we did things in the West, and he made the plan according to our advice and our counseling on the Western way of life, so that Krishna consciousness was spread with our participation in all these management decisions. But when we got to India, we didn't know anything about India. Prabhupada took over the reins, the entire reins of the management and expansion of Krishna consciousness in India. It was his personal project. We didn't have a clue how to do anything here. We didn't know what Prabhupada's plans for us were. I don't think even Prabhupada knew at first how he was going to do it. But the first thing he wanted to do was get us out on the street so as many people could see us as possible. Kirtans on the main streets of Bombay, programs in the main temples in Bombay, newspaper articles started coming out, the Hare Krishnas have come to India, interviews with Srila Prabhupada. And all this time, the money to support our activities here was being sent from America. Books were on their way by ship, but as yet we had no books to distribute. So it was just the first few weeks or months here in India were just to a display, so Prabhupada could show off his dancing white elephants, he called us. And then gradually Prabhupada began to see that if we are going to expand Krishna consciousness in India, it should be self-financed. And it should start with the leadership of India. So he created this life membership program. And the life membership program, which I think he put together when we were living out in Chembur in that in that Shiva temple,
yeah,
someplace where he had time to reflect on things, he devised this plan that for 1,000, 1,001 rupees, or 1,008 rupees, or 1,111 rupees, that you could become a life member of ISKCON. And that entitled you to receive all of the books that we had with us, plus all of the books that would ever be printed by ISKCON. And it also entitled you to travel around, on your travels around the world, it entitled you to live at any of the Hare Krishna temples. So this was Prabhupada's initial program, and he said to all of us, girls, boys, now you go out in Bombay and make life members. So this was our first duty, our first responsibility that Prabhupada assigned us, was to go out into important people's homes and offices in Bombay and enroll them in the life membership program. Now you must remember that we were used to doing things a little bit differently in America than you do here. We, for example, when we're selling something, we're very pushy about it. We don't take no for an answer. When we would come to the office of some very important person like Tata or somebody, the secretaries would all say, "Oh, well, you can't come in." "What do you mean I can't come in?" And we would barge right in and open the door and sit down with Mr. Tata or whoever it was and say, let me tell you about Krishna. You know, and slam our books and our life membership forms on the table. Sometimes they signed and gave us the money just to get us out of there. But we had some very aggressive sales techniques, again, because we wanted to please Prabhupada. If I could make more life members than the next devotee, Prabhupada would smile bigger when I walked in the room. So it became a transcendental competition as well. Even Giriraj, shy, retreating Giriraj, became a very bold life member maker. And Prabhupada was very pleased with the way he made life members. So this was the first program, and much of the Bombay activities to this day descend from those original life members. Srinath's father was one of them, and Srinath remembers seeing us when he was only 10 or 12 years old in his father's yard on the Malabar Hill, giving a program to the life members.
So I'd just like to back up again a little bit. When we were preparing to come here, Prabhupada said, bring equipment like slide projectors and even irons and film. And so I distributed it in each person's suitcase so it didn't look like we were on a mission, but that we were like 17 individuals. So like I put 4 rolls of film in one person's suitcase, but as soon as we hit the customs, the fact that we were Vaishnavas in yellow, they were so impressed, and they didn't bother us with looking into our suitcases or anything. So here we were at Kailas Saksaria's house, and like Malati Prabhu said, we were treated very nicely, but our job was to go out and chant in the street. So we went to Kalpadevi and chanted in the street, and to embellish what Malati Prabhu said is, as far as drinking goes, here we were supposed to be sadhus, but Kailash Sakseria's servants were following us around with silver urns of nimbupani. So here we were chanting, and then they'd come, and so it didn't look so good. And I wrote a poem about these first days, so I'd like to just read it. It's called Sadhus on Card Tables. The clean-shaven monks came together. I was amongst the sincere group. Bono from Japan, Dinanath from Africa, who arrived in Bombay. I felt apart, separation from my guru, my family, my homeland. We were greeted at customs by a man in crumpled brown suit. I asked for ID. He showed me a letter from my guru Maharaj, who was in Calcutta. Riding into Bombay, our caravan of ambassador cars roved through many villages, honking at cows and women walking with water pots on their heads. The warmth and slow feeling let me feel like home, sheltered in the feminine softness called India. Our procession rode past the seaside, the brakes and horn more important than the engine quality. The warm breeze wafted through the open window as our host Kailash chatted in a joking and friendly manner, welcoming us so we didn't feel like a stranger in a strange land. We followed the bay to an inlet waterfront past small crowded teeming sections of Kalpadevi, through hanging gardens on Ridge Road, onto a large wide road by the bay called Marine Drive. Kailash's car glided into an underground garage near a five-story mansion, overlooking the sea view and beachfront that rivaled Rio or Acapulco for beauty. Kailash treated us royally and fed us well. Next day, we went singing the holy names, chanting in crowded markets and slums. The sun was hot. We danced in ecstasy, sweating and happy. We were followed by Kailash's servants with silver urns of lemon water. Not used to this attention, we tried to stay humble. The next day, we were invited to a sacred meeting of saints, a Sadhu Sammelan gathering, wherein yogis, saints, sadhus, holy men, ascetics, babas, and sages met. The forest of Namashriyanya came to my mind, the meeting of thousands of holy people, convening to hear the first non-stop recitation of the Vedic text, the Srimad Bhagavatam. As we entered the mela, all these holy people with different colored clothing, ornate or simple, tilak face markings, some hold staffs, each representing various spiritual lines called sampradayas. The different marking not only identified the individuals, but pridefully separated each from each other, as they thought that their way was the best. Each saint was sitting cross-legged on a separate card table. This was like India's hokey, old-fashioned way of sharing spiritual culture benign. Sadhus on card tables. Different from the way in the West that shows its wares on television's evangelism or at expositions on barrows in the street, trade shows, or film commercials, sadhus on card tables. We were invited up to the stage. Two robed figures were there debating the age-old enigma, Aham Brahmasmi, thou art who? They stopped. We were asked to speak. We took our kartals and madranga drums and started chanting, singing out in a beautiful way. The sadhus in the card tables began to shake and swing and dig our holy sounds. The place rocked celestially, and they cheered us. There is wisdom in all traditions. East and west met. The twang was one. I know this as we all have the same father.
Prior to being in Bombay, we came to
Well, yeah. Well, while we were busy, the main party was busy in Bombay, stayed behind in Bombay to make life members. Prabhupada began to expand out into India as soon as he would get an invitation from Gorakhpur, Amritsar, Surat was a big one. So he would, some of the devotees would go with him on these excursions to other places, other towns. And we kind of started dividing up and going to different parts of India. I remember most the Surat trip to Surat, Gujarat, because it was the first time any of us had ever seen these kind of ceremonies, except what we had been reading in Srimad Bhagavatam, where we were showered with flowers from the rooftops and chanted. Everyone in the street, thousands of people took up the chanting, and it became it was an experience for us like right out of the Vedic times. This was the kind of impression I remember from that.
The streets were the streets were still narrow, and each house was decorated to the max with banners, festoons, and there were flower garlands crisscrossing from one side of the street to the other side of the street. And on the street they had rangoli, the designs made with the colored rice flour. And I don't know who organized all this, but it was simply incredible.
Mr. Jariwala.
Motorcycle Bhavan Jariwala. Mm.
The way we were greeted, not just at each street, but along the line of each street, people would come out, just like, you see at the Rath Yatra, people come out and they'll offer things to the cart. Well, they were coming out of their doors and offering garlands, offering some types of prasad, as we were inundated, we were trying to maintain some kind of a line, but we couldn't do it because people were just surrounding us, and it was all done with such, loving enthusiasm. In the West, maybe some famous person comes and people will come and there'll be a big barrier with, some kind of security guards keeping you and that famous person away. And so there'll be a crowd of people staring at this famous person on one side. And maybe if the famous person's a rock star, they'll be screaming. But there would never be interaction. But here we were literally being inundated with loving affection by people that we just didn't even know. And simply because they saw and accepted us as ambassadors of the holy name. And they would actually, we kept having to remove the garlands because they would be coming up in front of our face. We couldn't see, we couldn't breathe, And of course, we understood it wasn't us. We understood that each and every one of those garlands, each and every hug, each and every pranam was really there for Srila Prabhupada.
So, our team, my dear friends and confidants, we were separated now because Prabhupada thought that we were capable to carry on our own. And as Malati Prabhu said, we were invited to other places. And so Mr. Agarwal invited us to Amritsar. And so a large party went with Srila Prabhupada to Amritsar. And it was a gathering of many people, and I was asked to speak. And so this was a gathering of mostly Mayavadi impersonalists. You can tell by some of the talks of the other people. So when it was my turn to speak, I said that we actually have a relationship with Krishna. We do not become Krishna. This is enviousness to want to become who you adore. We love that person, and that person reciprocates, and Krishna is a person. And we have choices, and there's variegatedness in Vaikuntha. And I said, just like choices, we choose perhaps who we want to marry. We choose who we want to become friends. And we even choose what we want in our life. Just like we eat prasadam, we don't eat stool in the street. Well, at this point, the person took me off the stage. He just took me. Giriraj took my place in the middle of the talk, and they brought me to Prabhupada and said, and I could understand what they were saying, but it was a different language, that he has done this, and he said stool in the street instead of prasadam. And so Prabhupada said, my American and European disciples use graphic examples. And so the man was satisfied. Then Prabhupada said, they will argue about a hambramasmi, and we will reach Krishna by eating prasadam. And he popped something in his mouth. Then he says, those were good examples. I liked them.
You know, during these trips out and moving around India during this time, Prabhupada would always sit in the back rooms wherever we were being hosted and wheel and deal. You know, people would come in and he started enlisting people's help to do this and that, getting ideas how to spread Krishna consciousness in India while we were out parading around. Was it when you came back from Amritsar, is that when he dropped you in Delhi?
Yeah, but I still had something to say about Amritsar.
Oh, okay.
If I may. So, yes, I'll tell that about how he dropped me off in Delhi. So I wanted to make sure that everybody had a place to stay. So we had an area where Prabhupada slept, and we all slept near him, but there was no room for myself. And so Giriraj and I, as a team, went right in the middle of all the Mayavadis, because it's the only place to sleep. And this one man comes over, and he said, we are all God. And I said, no, we are servants. We are not God. And he said, no, the spark and the fire are the same. I said, qualitatively they're the same, but not quantitatively. You can't cook a meal with a spark. But he did not listen. So then he had his blanket, and he shows me, you see, the blanket and the thread are the same. And he takes the thread from his blanket. They're the same. It happened to be very cold in Amritsar, so I took his blanket and handed him his thread. Pleasant dreams. A half hour later, he comes shivering. Please give me my blanket. I said, if I do, you must bow down before my Guru Maharaj tomorrow. Which he did. So, I can talk about Delhi later. Or
go on, no, carry on.
Okay. So then we went to a Lakshmi Narayan temple with Prabhupada, and he was, as always, we were like walking with him, and his head's held high. He's the king, and we're so proud to be with him. And this temple was glorious. And then we went to the Golden Temple when it still was open, and accessible. And Prabhupada especially liked the cooking area because there was a huge wok in the gurdwara. And he said, spiritual communism, this is communalism. This was impressive. And we went up to where they're reading the Guru Granth, the big book. And it was wonderful going with Prabhupada to the Golden Temple. And then we went to a gathering of lawyers, attorneys, solicitors. Prabhupada, in his Bengali accent, called them liars, which is appropriate. Yes, I'm going to address these liars today. And he spoke about the book of the Manu, Krishna's laws. It was glorious. And then we were leaving Amritsar to go back to Bombay with Prabhupada and Devananda, Kausalya, Durlabh, Jamuna, all Giriraj, all the devotees were in the, and that day they had three classes in the train, first, second, and third. They were in second class, and I was sitting in the first class compartment with Prabhupada. Well, this was wonderful. We had great association. This is when Prabhupada told me that, yes, we call each other Prabhu, but you don't think, and he puffed out his chest, said, yes, I am Prabhu. That we think each other is Prabhu. And so I was so... yes, he met men and women. I spoke on that yesterday. So I was so happy to be with Srila Prabhupada. And they would bring prasadam from the second class, Kausalya Prabhu would bring it and Prabhupada would eat. And then after eating prasadam, we were in a compartment with four bunk beds and two people had come in and they put their baggage on the top bunks and they left. So it was still just Prabhupada and I. And so then after eating, and also our baggage was on the seat that I was sitting on. So I just had a little place to sit, and Prabhupada had the whole seat. And then after Prabhupada ate, he was lying down, and he said, come here. And I didn't know what Prabhupada wanted. Did he want me to sit at his feet and massage them? Did he want me to put his head in my lap? Did he want me to sleep side by side with him? I didn't know. So I immediately moved baggage and said, Prabhupada, I can sleep here. I still don't know what he wanted. He said, come here. He was lying down. Always a surprise. You never know the mind of the guru. That's exciting. So here we are on the way to Bombay, and I'm in Delhi, and I'm just looking at the station. Pani, 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 doo, doo, doo. Chai, chai, chai. And my feet were up. I was relaxing. This man comes in, and he speaks a little in Hindi, D.D. Gupta. He hands Prabhupada some sweets that crumpled in his hands. They must have been 50 years old. And Prabhupada says, go with this man. Get down. See what you can do. He says you can start a temple. He kicked me out of the train. He said, who will you take with you? I said, Giriraj, Jamuna. There was a man, Gopal, who didn't get along so well. I thought he would be good in a small yatra because he's very strong. And Banu from Japan. So... and I said, Durlabh and Kausalya, and Prabhupada said, no, I have plans for them. He had plans for them. So Banu, Gopal, Giriraj, Jamuna, myself went. This man, D.D. Gupta, I'm not degrading him, I'm just speaking scientifically, was very frugal. He was very cheap. He tried to get us, all five of us, on his motorcycle so he wouldn't have to pay for a taxi cab.
With your luggage.
Yeah, with the luggage. He really was really trying to do it. So he said, please, we must take a taxi. So not only did we take a taxi, but in his infinite wisdom, while we're following him, he gets out to urinate in the field. I remember one headmaster said, seeing this in Mathura, he said, oh, we have learned this from the British. And I said, well, I was in Britain for 4 years and I never saw anybody urinate in the street. And I said, besides, a fifth-class man follows a fourth-class man. So then he takes us to a place on Delhi Gate. There's actually Bandar and weasels in our little cells on Delhi Gate. Old Delhi, New Delhi. But it was a mandir. It was a mandir downstairs, and we started chanting. And soon Prabhupada writes a letter. There's a Dr. Atmaram, where I printed. And he will become a life member. He introduced the life membership program by letter. And there is a Mr. Dalmia. He will become a life member. And so I went with Giriraj, and I said, Giriraj, let me do the talking. Giriraj was 10 times, 100 times better life member maker than me. But at first I said, let me do the talking. Mr. Dalmia, a very pious man, immediately became a life member. In his office was a Dr. Lokesh Chandra, member of parliament, who became to this day my friend. He became a life member right there. He empowered us. But Prabhupada and I had talked, and he said that soon you will go to Vrindavan, which was really my dream. And I'd like to give you a chance to talk, and then I'll talk about the arrival in Vrindavan later.
Meanwhile, in Bombay, I was so happy to hear that Gurudas got assigned to Delhi, because I didn't know much about India yet, but I really liked Bombay. And I was happy that Prabhupada said, Shamsundar, you will stay in Bombay and manage things here. The first thing, the life membership started bringing in money, so we needed a place to live. And as everyone knows, in Bombay, it's very difficult to find a place to live for where all the devotees can stay in one place. We went to so many old buildings, new buildings, trying to find a place to live. Finally, one of the life members, Mr. Chabria, allowed us to stay in his hotel on the sea. Everyone knows that now, where it is, Sea Face or Sea Palace.
Sea Palace.
Sea Palace Hotel. And from there, that was our headquarters for making life members. Gradually, we came up with the idea that to organize and do things the Bombay way, in Bombay style. Bombay reminded me a lot of Los Angeles, because it was the communications center for India, the business and communication center for India. Whatever people did in Bombay, the rest of India would follow. So we thought, well, let's introduce Prabhupada in a very large way in Bombay, and then they'll know about him all over India after that. This was the reasoning behind the Pandal program and Cross Maidan, which we don't need to talk about that much, but everyone knows the history of that. Do you remember some? Well, everyone, we were rather few men, few ladies, so we had to divide up our duties. Each one was doing something to put this program together. There were people taking charge of advertising, people taking charge of providing Pandal equipment. I think Tamal Krishna was over by then helping us. He was in charge of the actual Pandal arrangements, like this, the tents and the, so on. You came back and helped with the advertising. You were cooking. Yeah, you organized the monstrous cooking for thousands of people. Anyway, the whole idea of the Pandava program began to grow and grow and grow. Luckily, we got permission from the city authorities to stage it in Cross Maidan. And then it became a real adventure to see how big we could really make this Pandal program. What Western advertising techniques were not widely used yet in India, so we introduced the developments that we were familiar with in the West in mass advertising. We spent most of our money for advertising. We put up banners and posters all over Bombay. We were able to enlist the whole side of a building owned by a life member, a skyscraper in downtown, and we had painted the words Hare Krishna down the side of the building. We got a large balloon on a rope and put it up over Cross Maidan with flashing lights on it that said Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. It went all night long, every night. So gradually the people of Bombay began to understand that there's something marvelous about to happen in this city. And Prabhupada was not in Bombay at the time. He was still traveling around, although he heard about what we were doing there. And then finally he came, and the Pandal program was held. Many people probably have stories about that. I don't remember too much.
I was thinking Yadubara had joined at this time in Bombay, Surat. He was there for these occasions. And I was thinking perhaps some of his, because he was looking at everything very closely through that camera. He saw a lot of things going on. I was thinking maybe you could say something. Well, I know Vishakha came, but I also know Vishakha is going to do a disappearing act if I suggest her to come up here, so I'm not going to do it.
She also joined him a little later.
In fact, she is disappearing. She has effectively disappeared.
Hare Krishna. Somehow or other, I had the good fortune to meet the devotees in Surat. I had done a magazine article after I got back from the Peace Corps in Malaysia. I was there for 3 years, and I deposited my photos of Malaysia in an agency in New York, a photo agency. In the summer of 1970, I got a call from the Indian editor of Asia Magazine. He saw the devotees on the streets of New York, and he wanted an article, a photo essay done on the devotees. So I originally met the devotees in 61 Second Avenue and did a story. I went to 61 Second Avenue, spent a few days. Also, Vishakha came to write the story. And then went to New Vrindavan for a week. But I was immediately attracted to Krishna consciousness from that experience. So I went back to school. I was in the graduate school at Rochester Institute of Technology in photography. And I had to do a thesis. So I heard about the Prabhupada was in India, and I was attracted to go back to that part of the world from my experience in Malaysia. So I proposed that I do my thesis on Krishna consciousness in India, and that was accepted. So in December 70, I flew to Bombay, and I had one address, and that was of Kailash Seksaria on Marine Drive. So I knocked on his door, and he said, he answered the door, and he said, "Oh, you just missed the devotees. They just left, and they had gone to Surat." So he said, There was no address also in Surat. I just had the name of the town. And Surat, actually at that time, was a very large, still, you know, at that time, even then, was a large town. So I arrived at the train station about 9 o'clock at night. And I didn't have an address. What to do. So the rickshaw wallahs were there, and I went up to one of them. Actually, one came up to me, and I said, American Hare Krishna. He said, get in. Not only that one rickshaw wallah knew where the devotees were, the whole town knew. By that time, they were known to everyone by their Harinam activities.